Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by our friends at Sedex. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thanks for joining us here on the show today. We've got a lot to get to here. Coffee cup is full, ready to have some great conversations on today's AOA. Coming up here in just a second, we're going to talk markets with Darren Newsom from Bar Chart. We'll look at weather with DTN's John Baranek as well. Coming up here in segment two today, get a rundown of how things are shaping up for the week ahead. Also in segment three, we're going to recap the latest meat demand monitor and a special report out from the folks with the Meat Demand Monitor. Dr. Glenn Tonsor with Kansas State University will be joining us after the bottom of the hour to discuss that. We'll also look at news headlines coming up here at the end of the show, including dairy margin coverage. That remains open. Some thoughts on that and more coming up here on today's AOA. As I mentioned, brought to you by Sedex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Sedex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Sedex.com. Well, as we kick off the week in the market trade, kind of a mixed bag, fairly quiet overall, a little bit of pressure in the grains. We're going to talk now about what's happening in the markets. Darren Newsom, senior market analyst at Bar Chart, joins us again here this week on AOA. Darren, thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend.
Yeah, I did have a good weekend, Jesse. I really appreciate you having me on again to get another week rolling here.
Yeah, and I'm looking at these markets, a little bit of profit taking maybe to start off the week after a solid end of the week on Friday. And I know, of course, we're keeping our eyes on those fund positions and the CFTC data and more. I guess let's start there. Any big notes you saw with the latest CFTC report and how that's is or is not influencing this market trade early this week?
Yeah, a couple things stood out to me last Friday afternoon when the reports came out, the CFTC came out. Number one, in soybeans, funds had increased their record large net short futures position by another 6,000 contracts. And not only that, they were holding short futures of 295,000 some odd contracts. That was also record large. So, at some point, don't know when, don't know what price level, but at some point it makes sense that they start covering some of those positions. In corn, we saw that they actually decreased their net short position, but that's not as bullish as it sounds. It was only by 1,700 contracts, and it came, addition by subtraction. They decreased their long futures, but just decreased their short futures by more. And I just don't view that as bullish a situation, as bullish a change, as if there was actual fresh buying going on in the market. And over in the wheat markets, we saw that they were actually starting to add some contracts back in Chicago, certainly kind of a precursor to what we've seen. This was as of last Tuesday. I think it was been the last 3 days, or at least three out of the last four, we've seen cancellations by China. We saw another one this morning of soft red winter wheat purchases. So it kind of fed on itself, certainly helped kind of kick the legs out of Chicago wheat first thing this morning. Again, I don't think it was hugely a huge surprise, at least on the commercial side of the market, but might have sparked a little bit of fun selling to start the day.
Yeah, that's a good point you mentioned there. I wonder, too, on the soybean side, you think about demand in these markets. I mean, are we hearing any chatter that China may be in the soybean market here at some of these price levels, Darren? I guess that would be outside of those cancellations in SRW wheat. I would be watching to see if they're maybe looking to get some soybeans. They've largely gone to South America. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Are you hearing anything there in terms of China maybe stepping back in for U.S. beans at all?
Well, in an industry where most of the talking heads always want to tell you something bullish, whether or not it's real or not. There is the chatter that China is going to be back. We do have to keep a close eye on the markets. Now, in my mind, as we watched that May-July spread and we saw the carry continue to strengthen last week, that tells me that there's not that increase in demand right now. Now, usually it's done by the time we hit the midpoint of the marketing year, which was the end of February. It could be a little bit later this year. If it's going to happen, it's going to have to be later than usual this year. We haven't seen it yet. It's always a possibility, particularly with the type of pressure that we've seen on the cash soybean market. With what it's telling us about available stocks to use, we've got plenty of supplies available at this point. So now we'll see if that doesn't attract some Chinese business here in the second half of the marketing year. Again, later than normal. We aren't seeing signs of it yet, but it could happen.
How about over in the stock markets? I know we got a lot more inflationary type data out this week. The producer price index will be later on the week. The consumer price index will be out Tuesday. Anything you're watching of note with some of this CPI, PPI data, et cetera, that could have a broader influence on the commodities and livestock, Darren?
Yeah, I know, again, a lot of the folks who talk about the markets like to point to these things and make them out to be important when in actuality, they really aren't. It comes back to, do we believe that long-term investors already have a good idea, not only of what U.S. inflation is, but global inflation is? And I think they do. That's why they invest in things. That's why they invest long-term. So again, there'll be some knee-jerk reaction. We'll see some markets move, but I don't think it's going to change any long-term trends in the market. That having been said, I think you and I have talked about this before. This is seasonally a downtime for U.S. stock indexes. So the fact that, you know, they've been going higher, that's a contra-seasonal move. And that tells us something fundamentally has changed in the market this year from normal. So we'll see how long that lasts. If all three major indexes start to come under pressure here in March, you know, I'm not going to start squawking that the sky is falling. Again, it looks like a seasonal move. Could it be tied to some inflationary numbers? Everyone knows inflation's still there. So I don't know how it's going to catch people by surprise. I think there's bigger issues on the global front, but certainly that's what's going to be talked about this week.
Well, good thoughts there. Good perspective to keep in mind. Darren, I want to ask too, livestock. You shared an interesting tweet, or I guess, do we call them X's now? I don't know
what we call them. Shared our X's.
We shared our X's. That could be scary. Thinking about the wildfires in the southwestern plains and the impact it could have on the cattle industry and beef prices and more. Some folks saying it could cause beef prices to go higher. I've heard folks say that it would be a regional type of thing. Yeah. Your thoughts on that whole situation right now?
Yeah, it was a Market Watch piece. And when I start to see, you know, these things come in, I always like to draw in some folks who know. And so I included some folks in the industry, in the cattle industry itself, into that conversation. And I did hear back from them. You know, they're hearing losses from anywhere from 7,000 to 70,000 head. And, you know, it's not that much different than the winter storms that might move across the, you know, the central plains and northern plains, these freak blizzards and so on. So, you know, the bottom line, at least the sense that I'm getting is, yes, I think it could be more of a regional market mover. The overall situation, you know, these things happen. It's terrible, absolutely, but I don't know that it's going to have the market impact that the piece made it out to be.
Darren, always great to have a conversation. Thanks for joining us here once again this week on AOA. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks again, Jesse.
Darren Newsom, Senior Market Analyst there at Bar Chart, joining us on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Cenex can help you determine the right high-quality premium lubricants to keep your equipment protected for the long haul. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll talk weather with DTN's John Baranek on the way next here on AOA.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets, anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
On the March episode of the Monthly Grind with the National Corn Growers Association, we learn about the newly launched Radical Challenge and the need for finding new uses for corn with Dr. Alex Buck, Director of Industrial Innovation at Iowa Corn, and Chad Epler, NCGA's Market Development Action Team Vice Chair.
The Radical Challenge is an open innovation challenge. It sets out to invest a minimum of $1.5 million checkoff dollars into startup and growth companies from around the world so that we can drive new uses for corn and develop long-term sustainable demand for corn production.
Well, what we have here domestically, corn is grown in about 100 million acres. And so 48% of the corn production is used for animal feed, 30% biofuels, 22% exports. But we still have this mass surplus that we need to find a use for. We are looking for people that have these ideas and want to put it to use and use these bushels of corn.
Learn more online at radical.vc and join us the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, as we discuss how cooperatives support farmers and ranchers and build strong communities. Each week, we'll chat with voices from throughout the cooperative system. From global market access to local expertise, we'll explore how co-op ownership means you own a world of opportunities. Tune in on Tuesdays or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at your nearest Cenex location or go online at cenex.com to get more information. Well, let's take a look at what's happening with weather here today. Joining us now for a conversation, DTN meteorologist John Baranek is with us. John, good to catch up with you again here this week. And I know we were chatting off air with daylight savings time. Maybe a little tough for some folks to wake up on Monday morning, but we are off and running, aren't we, John?
Yeah, it might be tough to wake up, but man, for a lot of us, it's going to be just a fantastic day. You know, we're sitting under high pressure. We got warmer temperatures building in. We saw some heavy snow late last week across Nebraska and Colorado. That's pretty much all gone already. And, you know, it's just wonderful. These next couple of days are going to feel great for just about everybody here east of the Rockies. So drink it in while we can get it.
Yeah, good thoughts there. Let's talk about this forecast for the week ahead. I've been seeing some chatter that maybe midweek in parts of the Midwest and Northern Plains, we could see some systems start to work through heading into the weekend. So give us the setup. What are we watching closely here this week, John?
Yeah, so really, Jesse, we've got one major system that's going to be kind of moving down through the Rockies here Tuesday, Wednesday, and that really gets out into kind of the central southern plains there on Wednesday and Thursday. We should see a pretty good response of building showers and thunderstorms across Nebraska, across parts of Kansas, and just kind of depending on how this kind of evolves, probably down through Oklahoma and Texas as well. But really, this system blows up on Thursday and heads eastward, and most of the Midwest gets into some pretty good precipitation. It does come with thunderstorms, and we'll watch for some severe storms here later this week. But, you know, pretty good rainfall across most of the Midwest. And I know Iowa's been kind of just thirsty for some good rain. They got a little bit on Friday, but it wasn't great. This one has a much better chance of putting down some better totals there in around Iowa. And then all the way down to the Gulf Coast too. We had some flooding from last week's system there across some of the southeastern states, and it looks like we got another round of some heavy rain to kind of fill up soils a bit before we start thinking about planting. But you know, one of the areas that got missed last week was the southwestern plains, and you know, that's mostly wheat country. And they've been dealing with wildfires and stuff like that. Right now, models don't really put out a whole lot of moisture out of the system down there. However, there is an upper level low that just won't quit across the Four Corners area later this week. And that's really a good spot to get moisture into kind of West Texas, Southwest Kansas. So we'll see if the forecast changes with that. So right now, not a whole lot of moisture down there, but I'm kind of skeptical about that. I think we've got some better chances for at least getting something down there through the weekend.
Yeah, and that would definitely help out with some of the wildfire issues that are ongoing there in the panhandle, the southwestern plains, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll watch and see if we can get a little precip down there. How about temperatures? I mean, I've seen some chatter. Models are indicating we could turn a little colder this weekend, really into the second half of the month. Is that something you're seeing, John? I mean, give us an update. What are we looking at temperature-wise?
Yeah, unfortunately for those of us that like it to be warm, I mean, we kind of had our winter, right? So we can't complain too much, but we do look like we're going to be changing the pattern up a bit here. We get a clipper to move down into the Midwest kind of Friday, Saturday, and that's going to be dragging some cold air down from Canada. And that's going to be the first of probably several clippers that move through next week through the end of the month that should continually kind of bring in those pulses of colder air. You know, in between them, we could warm up a little bit. And so we might be on a little bit of a roller coaster ride, just depending on where we're at in the country and where these little things track. You know, for the most part, we're on kind of a downtrend for the back half of the month in terms of temperatures. So I know a lot of folks are getting out there. They're doing some work early and probably not a bad thing. But, you know, if you were thinking about planting, it might be best to hold off a little bit until we see these temperatures kind of be a little stably more above that freezing mark. We don't want to run into issues with chilled soils or anything like that, where it might be okay to plant now and it looks all right, but you know, towards the end of the month, that those soil temperatures could drop quite a bit.
Yeah, good things to think about. I should ask as well, with some of this precipitation that's moving through, you know, thinking about some of that early planting we've seen and logistics on the river system, et cetera, are we going to help continue to elevate some of those water levels on, say, the Mississippi River, things like that? I mean, are you watching anything like that here with some of this next round of shower activity moving through, John?
Yeah, the storm last week is pretty good basis of like kind of what the widespread nature of the showers are going to look like with the storm this week. And that's all good for building soil moisture across the areas, one, that need it, and two, for, you know, keeping rivers from falling too bad. So overall, that's good. But once we get into this kind of clipper pattern this weekend and through the end of the month, clippers don't really come with a whole lot of precipitation. They come with streaks, mm-hmm. and usually we see a pretty decent streak of snow somewhere out of it, but it's a pretty narrow band of what does fall. Anything else is pretty light and almost meaningless. So you know, it's good here through this week, but yeah, for the second half of the month, it might be real tough to get some needed moisture in other spots. So okay, you know, things can change, and sometimes these clippers develop a little bit more than what they might suggest. So there's potential, I guess, but as long as we have a system moving through, I guess we have potential. But no, when they're clippers, they're typically not those that put down a whole lot of moisture.
All right, let's move our focus to South America. That Safrina corn crop being put in the ground in Brazil, for instance. How are we looking in terms of weather down in Brazil and Argentina here as we move towards the second half of the month of March.
Yeah, both of those countries had a really good week of weather last week. Some of the drier areas got some needed rainfall, and things look pretty good. This week's going to be a little different, though. We started to see southern Brazil dry out late last week and weekend, and they'll be pretty dry all this week. That's not good for them. The northern half of southern Brazil, it's kind of a weird way of talking about it. South central Brazil is where they plant safrinha corn. And so they double crop with that. And it's an area that doesn't have a whole lot of subsoil moisture and needs more. And so having a dry week this week is not good for them. Kind of the north central states and a northern Brazil where again, they also do safrinha corn. They've got showers around here this week, but it's kind of more isolated and, not so heavy this week. So that's not really good for them either. So Brazil's kind of in this spot where this week is not a good week of weather. On the flip side, Argentina kind of is. They had a front go through over the weekend and stall out in central Argentina, and that's not going to move a whole lot here this week. Kind of waffle around a little bit, but it's going to produce some areas of heavy rainfall there. And, a lot of the corn is in its fill stages. A lot of the soybeans are too. And it's kind of the perfect time for Argentina to get some heavy rain. Eventually, this front will lift north into southern Brazil here, maybe this weekend, but more likely early next week. And then that kind of flips the pattern a bit, and we get more active over Brazil and less active over Argentina for next week. So we're kind of flip-flopping a little bit here, but overall, it's good for Argentina, but not so much for Brazil. They need to have these consistent heavy showers in there because they just don't have the subsoil moisture that they need for the safrinha corn to last beyond their wet season. And that's kind of what they hope for. And just they don't have it right now. We still have about maybe 5 weeks to go of the wet season. So we don't have a whole lot of time left for them. And so that'll be a big thing to watch coming up, is just how this safrinha corn is going to respond to the limited subsoil moisture when those rains finally end.
Well, of course, we're going to keep our eyes on everything going on around the world, North America, South America, with our weather forecast. Folks can stay up to date as well. DTNPF.com with that DTN meteorologist, John Baranek. John, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us on AOA again this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Jesse. Always good to talk with you.
All right, John Baranek there with DTN. Coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a ways to keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. We're going to go over the latest meat demand monitor and a special report as well with Dr. Glenn Tonsor from Kansas State University. That's next here on AOA.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of what is happening in the markets on this Monday. Jesse Allen with you here. Let's dive in and take a look at things. We see grains mostly lower here, led by Chicago and KC wheat early on Monday with moderate losses in corn soybeans, 2 to 5, 6 lower there. We see mixed to slightly lower action in cattle and hog futures as well as we kick off our week. And we are expecting mixed trade in the livestock complex here as traders assess demand across cattle and hogs. hogs on the cash side. We've seen prices stronger to begin the week here the last few weeks. We'll see if that happens here today. Commitment to Traders report showed funds increasing their long live cattle futures position by just over 5,000 contracts. They increased their long feeder cattle position by almost 1,400 contracts as well. And they also increased their hog long futures position with just over 2,500 contracts, bringing that total to just over 65,000 contracts. So we'll see how things shake out with demand and more in the livestock trade here as we go through the week. Meantime, on the grain side, taking a little profit after we had a solid day on Friday. USDA, that WASDE report Friday was largely seen as benign for the commodity markets. Still watching what will come out of South America, Brazil. USDA only lowered their Brazilian soybean production estimate 1 million metric ton to 155 million. USDA also bumped its China soybean import total for the 22-23 marketing year, and they raised the 23-24 import estimate as well. So maybe a sign we could see a little more soybean demand from China. Keeping our eyes on that. Inflation, again, the focus on Wall Street this week. We'll get the consumer price index data out Tuesday, and that'll be followed by the producer price data on Thursday as well. Again, mixed action to slightly lower in grains and livestock. This is AOA. I'm Jesse Allen reporting.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. When the temperature goes down, so can your equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel Fuel is built with a balanced additive package to keep equipment moving. Learn more online. Just go to Cenex.com or find your nearest Cenex location right around the corner, where you can trust your local experts at Cenex. Well, let's take a look at the latest meat demand monitor out from our friends at Kansas State University in partnership with the Pork and Beef Checkoff. We're also going to talk about a special report out as well from the MDM folks. Joining us now, Dr. Glenn Tonsor with Kansas State University. And Glenn, it's good to talk with you again. Thanks for joining us on AOA.
Oh, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on, Jesse.
Well, let's start with the latest meat demand monitor, the February report. Give us kind of the rundown. What were some of the big highlights that we saw with the latest MDM, Glenn?
Yeah, the summary would be we had a little improvement in retail. So think grocery store for at-home consumption. So retail demand was up, I believe, in 6 of the 8 meat protein categories we track in February compared to January. However, is opposite story for food service. So all 8 main meals we examined, which is dinner meal away from home, food service was down, or demand more narrowly for food service meals, was down in February versus January. That would be the first summary. The second comment would be, if you inflation adjust those, which is a good practice as well, they are flat or down compared to the same month. So compared to February 24 versus February 23. So real demand or inflation adjusted demand was flat at best and likely weaker than it was a year ago, both retail as well as away from home. So continued challenges, some softness on the domestic meat demand front would be my first summary statement.
Well, I know too, you guys have been tracking, just looking at personal finances and how that all factors into some of these trends with with retail demand and food service demand. I mean, and you mentioned, you know, some continued challenges. I feel like that's still got to be the case here. Are things staying kind of on the same trend that they have been here the last few months, Glenn?
They are. And that's where, Jesse, I'll kind of bridge us from the base February report to the longer special report, as it talks about that topic specifically. But to wrap up our comments on the February base report, I ended it with a figure that showed what weekly food expenditures, at home as well as away from home were for the three different groups of whether you tell me your financial sentiment is better, the same, or worse than it was a year ago. And to your point, it's more of the same. I kind of half joke. I feel like a broken record for nearly a year now. I look forward to this tone changing. But in February, only 18% say their household finances are better than they were a year before. 37%, so well over a third of our country, say they're worse. And of course, the balance say they're about the same. The punchline from February is that's sort of more the same percentage breakdown we've had for several months. But I ended the base February report with a figure that showed how those food expenditures differed by those groups. And the real drive, you know, the take-home point from that, Jesse, is if you tell me your finances are worse than a year ago, you're tightening your belt on away from home spending. Specifically, you tell me you spent about $60 last week away from home if your finances are worse, but you spent about $85 away from home if you tell me your finances are better than a year ago. That nearly $25 per week per respondent difference is quite large in a country our size. And comparatively, the retail, you know, at-home food expenditures were right around $120 a week, kind of regardless of your sentiment. So people are tightening their belt on foot traffic away from home the more pessimistic they are on financial sentiment.
Yeah, that's some very interesting statistics to take a look at there. No, I would agree with you on that. And I'm hearing a lot of that same sentiment, folks kind of tightening their belt a little bit. So that's a couple of the big highlights from the base February meat demand monitor. But let's talk about this special report a little bit and give us some of the background on this report. I was just kind of perusing through it a little bit, some very interesting notes in here. So give us some thoughts just overall first on this special report, Glenn.
Yeah, and I'll start even broader first is to clarify for our listeners, Jesse, every month we put out these base 3 to 4 month reports. You and I just kind of summarize parts of the February one. And we periodically, and these aren't on a schedule, do these deeper dives. And they are pretty geeky and data dense. But we just did one of those in February that you're alluding to. And it was on this topic, the financial sentiment. And of most importance is what have been the trends in financial sentiment since we launched this project in February 2020? And what are the implications of that for meat demand? That's basically what we do in that project. So as noted, we started this broad MDM effort in February of 2020. So we have a full 4 years of data, over 2,000 people every month over that span, very rich data set. And consumer financial sentiment peaked in 2021. So remember, COVID hit us in 2020. It's not surprising people were pessimistic then. They got more optimistic in calendar year 2021. The pandemic eased up a little bit. The equity markets improved. There's a fair amount of federal, you know, aid that was distributed late in 20 into 2021. And then we get out to 22 and 23, we've seen a reversal of that. If you would plot inflation in our country, you'd get the exact same kind of narrative in terms of when things were good and they've struggled since then. I think you can translate into cost of living squeeze that's given us this financial sentiment pattern that we've been talking about at length. The punchline for domestic meat demand is it shouldn't surprise us that meat demand was stronger in 21 than it's been in 2022 and 2023, and even than it was here in the start of 24. Once we look at it from an inflation adjusted perspective, consumers are just more optimistic and they were more willing to spend is the punchline of that, Jesse. So we belabor that ad nausea if you're not a fellow geek like me. But I think it's important to let the data speak and kind of give some evidence for where my comments are coming from.
Well, and to that point, you know, I've heard some chatter for folks, you know, in the ag industry here as we move into 2024, there could be a little bit of a type of cost price squeeze, so to speak, for the broader ag economy. I mean, thinking about that kind of sentiment, it feels like that's a little bit of what we're maybe alluding to here with domestic meat demand, et cetera, is that a lot of folks are just kind of seeing the price and the cost and they're looking at their own finances. And to your point, kind of goes right along with what we've seen with the inflation trends here since COVID really kind of started, Glenn. I mean, talk about that a little more for us.
Yeah, and here, you know, I'll put a shout out to another guest. You periodically have Jim Minert at Purdue University yep. on, you know, the CME barometer they run. And, you know, these two efforts are quite different in several ways, but that's a farm producer sentiment, you know, metric. I'm talking general public sentiment metrics here in the MDM. But make no mistake, the macroeconomic environment in the U.S., inflation rates impacting what we buy, whether I'm thinking about buying a tractor, combine, or seed, or as a farmer, or if I'm thinking about, you know, buying an input if I'm a livestock producer or a general consumer, those inflation trends show up and they have a cost squeeze effect, as you alluded to. The jury is out among economists how 2024 is going to shape up. It's pretty easy for me to tell the history, which is what I've done for the most part with you today. But, you know, people are real interested in setting in March what the rest of this year is going to look like. I hope we avoid, you know, an increase in inflation. It's possible we're going to have lower interest rates as the calendar year goes on, but there's a lot of uncertainty on that. And I think that's what's showing up in this financial sentiment remaining fairly low. So I think it remains worth watching. I was kind of joking earlier that I'm sort of tired of talking about it because it is, I feel boring when I bring it out, but I continue to think it's the biggest headwind for meat demand. And to put the parallel for other guests, I think it's one of the bigger parallels for ag producers as well.
Is there one area of meat demand that maybe some of the trends here over the last few years could point that we could see maybe a continued increase? I mean, would it be, you know, on the beef side, pork, chicken? Is there anything in the data that suggests something, you know, might continue to rise here? Has that been something you found in the special report data, Glenn?
Yeah, so the demand for convenience is what I'm going to give you as a response, Jesse. So this isn't a okay. pork versus chicken thing, but you know, particularly among those who are in a better financial situation, the value of their time tends to be the highest. And, you know, that group appears to be willing to pay more for, you know, convenience. Now the simple example of convenience is, you know, boneless, but there's a lot more complicated versions of that. You know, the use of an air fryer is viewed as more convenient, and some cases, you know, people think it tastes better. That tends to be aligned with the younger generation. I'm purposely giving you a response that's not species specific because I don't think it's really species A versus species B at the moment on the demand front. I think you've got a subset of the public that's doing pretty well, and their demand for things like convenience is going to have a long staying power. The flip of that is, you know, the importance of price because of this, you know, pinch of my wallet effect probably isn't going to disappear for at least a third, if not over half, of the public. So those that say their finances are worse are probably more price sensitive, and they are the ones that are going to be kind of priced out as these costs get pushed through the system.
All right. Well, good thoughts. And I know, Glenn, if folks want to look at the special report or the monthly meat demand monitor reports as well, I know they can all find those very easily online. How can we find more details, Glenn?
Yeah, so everything on this MDM effort is fully available, the rawest of the data to some summary papers that you and I are talking about, some data visuals, everything you can find on our agmanager.info. That is agmanager.info.
And again, agmanager.info for more information. Glenn, real quick, about 30 seconds, any final takeaway from any of this latest data that you want folks to really remember?
There's no grilling effect. You know, I feel the need to be a little bit optimistic and not just Dr. Bear with you here today, Jesse. You know, I'm talking to you here on spring break. You know, some of our listeners either have kids or grandkids that are out on spring break where it's warmer. You know, we're about ready to fire up the grills, and it's possible that we're going to have some improvement in sentiment that is coupled with grilling season. And that could be a nice supporting factor for domestic meat demand. And I hope in the months ahead, you and I are talking about that.
I hope so as well. Dr. Glenn Tonsor with Kansas State University, appreciate you joining us here on AOA today. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right, find more again, agmanager.info. Up next, we'll take a look at news headlines here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Lubricants. Back with more right after this.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section. When dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL, opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting at homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. Anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
On the March episode of the Monthly Grind with the National Corn Growers Association, we learn about the newly launched Radical Challenge and the need for finding new uses for corn with Dr. Alex Buck, Director of Industrial Innovation at Iowa Corn, and Chad Epler, NCGA's Market Development Action Team Vice Chair.
The Radical Challenge is an open innovation challenge. It sets out to invest a minimum of $1.5 million checkoff dollars into startup and growth companies from around the world so that we can drive new uses for corn and develop long-term sustainable demand for corn production.
Well, what we have here domestically, corn is grown in about 100 million acres. And so 48% of the corn production is used for animal feed, 30% biofuels, 22% exports. But we still have this mass surplus that we need to find a use for. We are looking for people that have these ideas and want to put it to use and use these bushels of corn.
Learn more online at radical.vc and join us the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA. Joining us now, Kelly Garrett with Extreme Ag, as we talk about his partnership with the Truterra Carbon Program. Kelly, tell us a little bit about your operation and how you got involved in carbon programs.
Well, I guess I have the notoriety of being the first farmer to sell my carbon credits into the open market system. That first sale was to Shopify on December 1st of 2020. I then became involved in Truterra with their original Microsoft contract, which was in the spring and summer of 2021, and been great to work with these folks, and I'm still here today. The folks at Truterra, being a Land O'Lakes company, being a century-old cooperative, tried and true Land O'Lakes, I just can't think of many more secure, credible names in the agricultural industry. So that immediately appealed to me, and it turned out to be correct. And that's the reason I'm still here today. Very farmer-friendly.
Hear the rest of Kelly's story on the American Ag Today podcast and learn more about Truterra online at truterraag.com.
The landscape of media has changed, and people are more skeptical than ever about where they get their news and information. While major news outlets show decreasing credibility, your local farm radio station still shows strong marks. In a recent survey, farmers rated information from their farm broadcasters as almost twice as reliable as major news outlets. Farm radio continues to be transparent, honest, and trustworthy. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA. Thanks for sticking with us here today. The show brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Well, let's take a look at news headlines here to wrap up today's program. The House Agriculture Committee laid out a roadmap to relieve labor shortages that have seriously impacted America's farmers and ranchers. The Agriculture Labor Working Group released its final report on how to improve the H-2A guest worker program. It includes more than 20 recommendations to streamline the program and make labor more affordable for farmers. Now, American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall says, quote, "We're losing American farms rapidly, and there's no question the broken workforce system is partly to blame," end quote. Now, while the working group recommendations don't address all the labor challenges facing farmers, they do offer needed solutions, such as streamlining the recruiting and hiring of H-2A employees. Now, they also want to expand the H-2A program to meet year-round needs, recommend paying employees based on duties performed during the majority of the day, and reform wage calculation standards to provide stability in farm worker pay rates. Now, the full committee report is available online. Just go to agriculture.house.gov for more information. Well, a warm February led to increased snowmelt and runoff in the Missouri River Basin above Sioux City, Iowa. February runoff was 1.8 million acre feet, 161% of average, with above average runoff in every reach except Sioux City, which was near average. However, the updated 2024 calendar year runoff forecast for the basin continues to be below average. John Remus, chief of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Missouri River Water Management Division, says, quote, "Despite the increased runoff in February and improved soil moisture conditions, we expect 2024 runoff to remain below average," end quote. Now, the much warmer than normal temps led to an early melt of the lower than average plains snow. Soil moisture conditions are near or above normal across most of the basin, with below normal soil moisture conditions in the eastern basin. A 2024 calendar year runoff forecast above Sioux City is 17 million acre feet, 66% of average, and current system storage is 53.9 million acre feet. Well, the National Pork Producers Council announced the induction of new officers and newly elected members to its board of directors. NPPC CEO Brian Humphrey says, quote, "We're thrilled to welcome these accomplished individuals to NPPC's board of directors. The diverse backgrounds and proven track records will provide valuable perspectives and strategic insights as the pork industry navigates the challenges and opportunities ahead," end quote. Lori Stevermer of Easton, Minnesota, was elected NPPC president. She's a co-owner of Trails End Farm and has a rich history of advocating for the pork industry at local, state, and national levels. She previously served on the executive board of the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. During her year as president-elect, she exemplified her leadership and unwavering commitment to the industry by testifying before Congress and representing the industry at international trade conferences. Duane Statler of Ohio was elected as president-elect, and Rob Brenneman of Washington, Iowa, is the new vice president. Well, the sign-up is continuing for the Dairy Margin Coverage Risk Management Program. John Burge is the acting deputy administrator of farm programs for the Farm Service Agency. He says the program is already paying out this year.
DMC sign-up for this year started on February 28th. It ends on April 29th, and payments started being issued. We had to adjust the regulation as a result of some actions by Congress. That adjustment is now done. The rule was published. And when that happened, one of the important pieces of that is it's retroactive back to January of 2024. And because those payments triggered for January of 2024, those payments started being issued again. But going forward now, people can elect into DMC coverage going up until April 29th.
And he says it's open to any dairy operation in the country.
It's generally something that conventional dairies take advantage of. It's a risk management tool. It helps deal with some of those uncertainties that impact the prices for milk. Last year, we put out $1.2 billion in DMC payments. It's a really pretty cheap program. It costs about 15 cents per hundredweight for $9.50 coverage. That risk protection is just really inexpensive. So largely, this is conventional dairies that buy into this. And again, we put out quite a little bit of payments last year.
Burge says there are multiple coverage options as well.
There's several different options for coverage. You can go onto our website. There's an online dairy decision tool that's available there for people to do some homework before they go into the office and make a determination on what kind of coverage they would like. Producers have to certify with FSA that the operation is commercially marketing milk. There's a number of different forms that they would have available at their local county office, and then there's an administrative fee of $100. That fee is waived for farmers who are part of our either limited resource community, beginning farmers, or socially disadvantaged farmers, or a military veteran.
And Burge adds that producers can lock into a multi-year contract or sign up every year. For more information, just go to fas.usda.gov. Again, fas.usda.gov. Well, also looking at the wildfires in the Panhandle and in the Southwestern Plains, it's estimated that tens of thousands of cows have died in the Panhandle wildfires. Now, while some people don't think this will have a big impact on meat prices at the grocery store, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show with Darren Newsom, others like Dr. Rick Avery with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service say it will.
I think it's safe to say they're going to go up. But yeah, the price of beef already is at a pretty high level, and certainly an incident like this is going to have an upward effect on pricing moving forward. At this point, we don't know. We have economists who are already sussing through the information to see what the ultimate impact will be on that.
Now, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension economist Dr. David Anderson says it may be weeks before there are estimates for lost cattle, but he expects the impact of the wildfires to be localized. He adds that the impact to cattle or beef prices won't be as drastic because of the numbers and scale of the entire market. Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller said last week that individual ranchers could suffer devastating losses, but he predicted the overall impact on the Texas cattle industry would be minimal. He says cattle raised at the Panhandle are largely range cattle, not feeder cattle. He added that any impact on the price of beef for consumers would be minimal and at least a year away from being felt. And with that, we are up against the clock. We're out of time here today on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium grease is made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. Have a great rest of your day. I'm Jesse Allen. Thanks for listening to AOA, Agriculture of America.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
And we're back looking at another lopsided matchup, Jim. Today we have a combine taking on a train.
Yeah, that heavy train is about 1,000 times heavier than the combine. No competition there.
Right, especially given that it'll take at least a mile to stop that train.
That's 18 football fields.
It's no contest. Every day people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
This message brought to you by Operation Lifesaver.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I pushed through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.